I'm just another attendee. I'm Glenn in Cleveland. Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Glenn. You've been on these calls regularly. I'm Christina Shumbro from Baltimore.
Hi, Christina.
I've been on these sporadically.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. It must be Steve.
No, this is Kurt Mortensen.
Oh, Kurt. Wow. Cool.
Yeah, you get me today. Hopefully no one holds that against me, but you're going to have to deal with me today. Steve,
we'll put up with it. This is Christina from Baltimore.
Hey, everyone. Christina, everyone's doing well? Everyone's out making the world a better place?
Absolutely.
That's what we like to hear.
That I can be counted upon to do, is that every day I make the world a better place.
Yeah.
That's all I ask, and a big part of that, of course, is persuasion, because some people don't know that they need to change, but that's what it's all about. So last week we talked a little bit about negotiation. I think, wasn't I on the call last week? It all blurs for me, too. Yeah, I think we did. It was a negotiation last week?
I believe so.
I wasn't on it last week.
Yeah, all right. Does everyone know that these are recorded and posted?
Mm-hmm.
If you do miss a week, just remember they are recorded and posted. Don't ask me where. I just know that it's happening. They are recorded and posted somewhere. Well, let's get into a little things. And again, we're going to spend some next half hour together talking about some do's and don'ts and things that will help you out. But if there's something that you're running into, we can handle that during the Q&A. I've told time and time again, kind of the foundation of everything that I talk about is that a lot of things talk about, you know, our subconscious triggers. It feels right. It doesn't feel right. And about a month ago on this call, I talked about, I believe, how mood matters. The person's mood, your mood, those subtle things, people pick up on those. I want to talk about a few things you need to be kind of aware of when you're in the persuasion process with different moods, different emotions, different mindsets, because the way you persuade other people should be different. When someone's stuck on anger or someone's stuck on a different motivation or someone is frustrated, how do you deal with that type of person? And of course, this is also true in your own life. Most people don't even know why they're feeling angry or why they're feeling tense. It's just something they feel, and we need to be more aware of those things, not only in our own lives, but in other people, to pick up on those different type of facial expressions and things that you're looking for. One of the first things I want to point out that's very important in the persuasion process, and especially even in real estate, is to understand the different types of motivation. And I could spend hours on this, but on a rudimentary level, there's two motivators in life. Does anybody know what those are? What are the two motivators in life?
Ooh, I should know those.
Two things to get you out of bed, two things to get you on this call, two things to whatever.
Money.
Money's a big part of it. Money could be actually in either category. Some people say pleasure, pain. Some people say reward, punishment. Mm-hmm. I package it this way.
Right.
You're either motivated by either inspiration or desperation. Okay, that's it.
Good.
So I could spend all day talking about how you stay motivated personally, but I want to talk about your prospects and people that you're talking to. And we'll use some real estate examples here. Because the way you motivate a person that's an inspiration is very different than desperation. And sometimes people don't understand the difference there and how that works. Desperation tends to be rooted in fear and in worry. Motivation's more, you know, it's more emotional. It's more as far as the vision and excited about the future. So when someone's home is going into foreclosure, do you think that's inspiration or desperation?
Desperation.
Desperation.
Yeah. And if somebody's buying an apartment complex for the grandchildren's college education, that would be what?
Inspiration.
So we have to, again, the way we persuade these two types of people is very, very different. And a lot of times people always use the same type of motivation, and it backfires on them every once in a while. Because if someone's already in inspiration, you need to keep them there. So here's the message of the day. When someone's in desperation mindset, okay, what you want to do to motivate them is that you use a little desperation, you crank up the fear a little bit, and then you buffer that with the inspiration as far as, look, your home's going into foreclosure. If we don't do anything in the next 3 weeks, what's going to happen? Okay, you're going to get kicked out. Okay, so we're cranking up the desperation. Then we buffer that with inspiration by saying, but you know, with credit repair and a few other things, and in 2 or 3 years you're going to be back on your feet. This is just going to be a small bump in the road. Millions of people go through this every year. We're going to be able to take care of that and make sure that this never happens to you again. Do you see what I just did there?
Absolutely.
So I cranked up the fear, the desperation, and I buffered it with inspiration. Now, here's where people really blow it. When somebody's already an inspiration, okay, so they're already an inspiration mindset, you need to stay there. The moment you kick back into desperation, it'll backfire on you. You'll repel them. They won't like you. They won't do business with you. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Could you give a subtle little thing? Go ahead with a question.
I was just asking, could you give a brief example of something like that? I understand exactly what you're saying. That's great. But is there any way you could give, like, a little example?
You bet. Now, the first example I've given on desperation, remember I talked about the foreclosure. I cranked up the desperation by saying what's going to happen in 3 weeks. Okay, that was a desperation. Then I buffered that with the inspiration as far as bumping the road, not going to work. Now, if they're buying an apartment complex to fund their grandchildren's education, I would stay in inspiration and say, okay, so you want to do this. How many grandchildren do you have? It's going to be for your great-grandchildren. You know, what an incredible thing, a little boost to the ego and the esteem. You stay in inspiration. You wouldn't say something like, well, you know, you need to, I would stay away from you. Well, you have to act now. And using the desperation, you know, that kind of repels them a little bit. You're staying in the inspiration where the ego, the esteem, good for you, what a great grandpa, your grandchildren are going to love you, you're leaving a legacy. You're staying there, and that's where they need to stay.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. So
they're in a good place. You don't want to drag them away from it.
Exactly. They're already there. They're already there. Keep them there. A lot of people use the fear and the other things, and that's a lot of people's only persuasion tool is fear because it works every once in a while. So, you know, I always say that even a blind pig can find food, right? You can have the best persuasion technique ever, and it's going to work every once in a while. That's why all these aggressive telemarketers are still aggressive in using old school techniques, because it works 2 to 3% of the time. And they're just going to be treat it like a numbers game. They're going to find that blind pig, and they're going to take, you know, that's just kind of how it is.
Sure.
So that's very important. So now the question of the day is, so as you're talking to somebody, whether it be, you know, negotiating a contract or real estate, how do you know if they're in inspiration or in desperation? How can you tell?
Partly by the tone of their voice and by the look on their face.
Okay, so we have basically kind of what they're saying, number one, and of course we're reading the nonverbal. So let's take desperation. Now remember, with desperation, they're trying to get away from something, right? There's something there that's bothering them, and they're trying to get away from it. Because you can motivate anybody with desperation. If anybody knows any lazy teenagers, you know how to motivate them. If they're on the couch, they won't get up, you light the couch on fire, okay?
Right.
You're going to see motivation, but it's very temporary. So with desperation, the way they're talking, they're trying to move away from something. They can't wait till it's over in their life. We want to get this chapter done and gone. We want to move on, so they're getting away from something. They're stuck in the past, and they're trying to avoid some type of pain or punishment. You can hear it in their voice, longer sighs, they're talking slower, you know, why me type attitude. They're stuck in the blame game. Can't believe this happened to me. Because, you know, in a foreclosure, we've talked about that it's never their fault, right? Even though it is, the human brain needs to be right, so they're going to be pointing fingers. And that's desperation. You know, why me? They did this to me, the victim mentality. And so, again, this is the point. We're going to crank it up a little bit and then buffer that with inspiration. Versus the person that's in an inspiration mindset, how would you recognize that person? How would you know to keep them there?
Flip side of the same signals.
Exactly. So there's a little more energy in their voice. Their posture's probably a little more erect. They're moving towards something, okay? They're moving towards a vision. They're moving towards something that excites them. They're moving towards a goal. They have hope in the future. They're motivated by some type of reward. They love the ego and the boost to their esteem. All those things come into play with inspiration. They're excited about moving towards there and getting there. And you're just helping them fill in the blanks. They can see where they're going. They're already mentally there. You're just filling the blanks, helping them find a way to get there. And more energy in their voice. Their word choice is different as far as the excitement. And they've always wanted to do this. And it's been a lot of fun. And that sort of thing. You want to keep them into inspiration. What else would you be looking for, you think, between the two as you're talking to somebody?
Well, if somebody's in inspiration, they're going to be initiating more things and asking you more questions. And when you make a suggestion or ask them a question, they're going to respond very quickly, whereas when they're in desperation, they're probably going to be a little more withdrawn.
Yeah, they'll be more open to the information. They'll be more, as far as filling in the blanks. Desperation, they hold their cards tighter. Now, this is before they get to depression. Let me explain this. When someone's feeling the emotion of depression, they have given up and there is little or no deception. So if they've completely given up mentally, and we teach this when we teach detecting deception, when they've hit depression, when they've given up, it's no use, there's really no deception. They'll lay all the cards on the table. They'll tell you all the negative things. But when they're in desperation, they're not quite there yet. They're still holding their cards in because everyone's out to get them. And so that's a good point. Inspiration will be open and more willing to share the information. Any questions on that so far? Does that make sense?
Sure. Would it make sense that the inspiration, people in that frame of mind or emotion, would seem to be, let's call it, more in control, more confident, in line with, let's say, setting goals and actually following through with them?
Yeah, they're more confident. They're usually more successful people. They're more probably into the affirmation type things or excited. But you have to understand that, different things, and on different days we might be motivated by inspiration or desperation. We go to the dentist out of inspiration or desperation.
Usually desperation.
Both. Exactly. It is both. I mean, if I'm getting brand new veneers on my teeth I've been excited for, I've been saving up for 10 years, that's inspiration, isn't it? If I got a tooth that's killing me, that's desperation. So all of us go through the same cycle every day. Okay, is it inspiration? So you need to see in that moment what it's going to be. So we're not always stuck in each one. It could be the inspiration. If somebody's excited about writing a book, of course that's inspiration. If they're worried about how they're going to make the next house payment, that's desperation. Or if they have two homes because they moved, that's probably desperation. So you got to be able to gauge the situation, the person, the nonverbal behavior, and also the things that they're saying. Remember, you're becoming students of human nature. That is more important than anyone can teach, is learning to read people and understand people, reading those nonverbals. Now, the one thing I want to point out with desperation, most of the time you'll be dealing with desperation. And when you're dealing with desperation, we have to talk about the emotion fear. Is fear good or bad?
It can be both.
It can be both. Is it okay to use fear to persuade somebody?
Sure.
If it leads to a good result.
Yeah, it is. Most people use it too much. The big example I like the best is, is it okay for a dentist to say only floss the teeth you want to keep? Okay. So that would be fear, and that's what they use. Most people use it in the wrong way. So we need to talk about, okay, how do you use this in the right way? Fear. Now, first of all, the way our body works, when we sense fear, the blood leaves. Where's the blood rush to in our bodies? Do you know?
I'm inclined to think the core.
It goes to the core,
sometimes
it goes to the legs. We're getting ready for fight or flight, right? Those are our two options with fear.
Right.
So even, and fear, it's one of those things. It's an anxiety or a tension caused by danger or apprehension. And so fear can be a good thing. It reminds us to stay alert, to pay attention. We were moving away from some unpleasant circumstance or potential destruction. And it could be real or imagined. And a lot of people try to solve fear with logic, and that's not always the best thing. If someone's afraid of flying, and they get on the plane, and you get all your statistics out about, look, it's safer than driving your car. It's does that work?
Nope.
No.
It doesn't. We have to, okay, how do you handle fear? How do you work with people that are stuck in fear? Yeah, distraction is a big one. Helps a lot of people. But you have, again, the logic. That's it. Even as parents, my daughter, Dad, there's a monster in my bed. Every night she's ending up in my bed and kicking me in the head and doing all that stuff. I'm thinking, look, we got to... Every night, same thing. The monster's under my bed, so she hops in the bed. So I've got to fix this. I'm Mr. Persuader, right? And I say, look, And, you know, everyone, we automatically knee-jerk to the logic. I say, well, you know, there's no such thing as monsters. And, of course, does that work?
No.
Not with children.
No, especially with children, right? There's just no way. No.
They usually you go, yeah, let's work together and get rid of this monster.
Exactly. That's what works the best. But I tried another thing. I tried, well, okay, I turned the light on and said, look, let's look into your bed. Let's look in your closet. There's no monsters. And my daughter's all, well, duh. The light's on. They don't dot around when there's lights. Okay. So
right.
I get the flashlight out and I show her and she's all, Dad, that's a light. That didn't work. And so we solved the solution together. Like you mentioned, I got a can of that compressed air that you clean computers with. I put a little label on it that said monster spray, and we sprayed underneath her bed in the closet. Done deal. Going to sleep. It never was an issue again. Okay.
Right.
Wow.
So sometimes with fear, we got to be creative, because our natural instinct is to be logical. Well, you shouldn't be sad or you shouldn't be depressed. And they're like, well, I am. So now what? It just doesn't work. So fear is interesting. And fear can come from society, our experience, parents, worry. And if you remember, there's only two fears in life. So we know what those are. What are the two fears?
Death.
No, that you're born with. Death is a big fear, but what are the two fears that you're born with, that people are born with?
Abandonment.
That comes later, but I'm talking about brand new, you know, one-week-year-old baby.
Fears. Loud noises, big people.
That's one of them. Loud noises and the fear of falling are the only two fears people are born with. So as you're working with people or understand your personal life, all these fears that are holding you back, the fear of failure, fear of success, fear of criticism, fear of public speaking, those have all been learned.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when you're dealing with people, you have to understand these are learned fears. And you have to they're reliving an experience. As we teach people to do presentation skills, You talk to the lady, she's afraid to do it, and this she was about, I can't remember her age, but we were trying to train her to do it, but she would just turn red, and it all came back. It was a learned fear, and she realized it was in third grade. She was giving us a speech. She was crossing the auditorium, tripped and fell, and, of course, the whole auditorium, what did they do?
Laugh.
They laughed. That's funny, right? That's a funny thing. Of course, they're laughing at her, and she blew her presentation. But every time she ever thought about it, that experience, kind of subconsciously, she relived it, and although that fear came back to her. So an important thing, it's been overused. People use it too much, but it is a powerful motivator. It's three times more powerful a lot of times than other things that we can use to motivate people. We can use it in the wrong way.
So you're saying use fear to motivate people.
So what I'm saying is when they're in desperation, let's crank up the fear and buffer it with inspiration. But let me give you the right formula to do it, because most people just try to scare people. Because a lot of times it doesn't work. You look at the alcohol campaigns with the teenagers and the cigarette campaigns, it actually increases alcohol consumption, right? It's just too much. Or my daughter's in driver's ed right now, and they show them these movies of dead people on the road. I mean, just so extreme that it's laughable. Does that make sense?
And yet, I would think that would work.
And it does, and especially at that age. Or you go to Asia, and all the, for example, I went to Thailand. I was doing a training over there, and I was talking to my taxi driver. He was smoking, and I was talking to him about it, and he showed me, because it was a law over there where they had pictures of lung cancer on the cigarette package, on the box. Okay.
Wow.
He was showing it to me. He was excited. Look what they're doing. Look at that. Didn't even faze him. It was so out there, because cancer affects other people. No, it would never affect us, right? It's always somebody else. But it was so out there and too much that it had the opposite effect.
Hmm. Well, that may explain it. My daughter, when she was 14, she started smoking. And the year she started smoking, both of her grandfathers were dying of lung or throat cancer from smoking.
And it didn't faze her, right?
Didn't faze her.
Yeah.
Didn't faze her. I mean, to me, I just couldn't believe that when I found it out many years later.
Well, especially at that age, because...
They think they're invincible.
Well, part of that's because of the frontal lobe. I don't know, have you heard that term before?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. They have gotten...
The brain matures from the back to the front. Okay, and the last thing to mature on around age, 22, 23, okay, to get that number, the frontal lobe develops, which is responsible for the decision-making and future consequences. So that would explain tattoos on the neck or smoking, because it doesn't matter right now. And so for teenagers, it's all about the right now. What are the consequences right now? Not 20 years down the road. That doesn't matter. And so
yep.
when you're motivating teenagers, it's more of an instant type thing. And so you have my permission. I told my kids this, that, look, your frontal lobe's not developed till 22, so I'm responsible for all decisions. Kind of a fun conversation. It doesn't work, but you know.
No, I was going to say, did that work?
No, but around my house, I can say frontal lobe, and they know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay?
That's cute.
All right, so we're let me give you this formula, and then we'll take questions as far as if you're going to use fear in a copy on the Internet or with teenagers or with anybody, there's four things that need to have for it to work. Okay? The first one, like we talked about, it has to be something unpleasant. Okay, cancer in 50 years, or they're going to have a cure for cancer by then, is a big mentality of teenagers many times. It's unpleasant right now. Can it be unpleasant right now?
Right. So if you can get the person your kid wants to be a friend with to say they would be disgusted at kissing a woman who was smoking, that would be a unpleasant right now. I want to kiss this guy, and he's not going to kiss me if I have smoke on my breath.
Especially if it was a movie star they looked up to, or
right.
someone they wanted to date would even be better.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Say, oh, they're cute. They're cute. And they say, you know, smoking just turns me off more than anything. Makes
yep.
me throw up. Why would anybody ever do that? And you're like,
right.
yeah, that's good stuff. Keep going, right? Keep inviting
right.
them over. So that's
yes, right.
I'm a smokeaholic. No, it's like, I'm sorry. I'm a smokeaholic, but it's like kissing an ashtray. I understand.
Right. Licking out, it's like licking out a dirty ashtray.
Yep.
Yeah, something unpleasant. And that's where it combines with the number two, is it has to be imminent, something right now in the future. Okay, so it's unpleasant to them, and it's imminent. If I was here to scare you about the potential of an asteroid hitting the Earth, and I'm going to say, look, you got to prepare now, asteroid's going to hit the Earth, and try to scare you, use fear, what is your knee-jerk reaction on that?
Nah. Not going to happen.
What? A, it's not going to happen. It's not going to be imminent. And you're probably thinking, if it does, we're all dead anyway. So, right? It's
right.
not that big of a deal. So it's not imminent. It's not unpleasant enough. I mean, it's unpleasant to die from it, but there's nothing we can do about it. And that's
right.
where number three comes in.
Uh-huh.
So the first one is unpleasant. Number two is imminent. Number three is, you're not just scaring them for fun. You need to provide a solution. What is the solution here? So, okay, foreclosure. Is it unpleasant you're going to get kicked out of your house in three, okay? Is it imminent? It's going to happen in 2 weeks. All right, this is what we need to do. Here's the solution. And the biggest one is number four, is they need to feel capable. If you're trying to use fear with a teenager to quit smoking, they might not feel capable or know how to do it. It's not just stopping. Or if you're trying to help someone get out of a foreclosure and you're asking for this form and to call this and to get this number, they might not understand it. They might not feel capable. And remember, a confused mind says no. They might pretend to do it, but they won't say, I don't get it, I don't understand, because people don't want to look stupid. Do they feel capable of getting straight A's in school? Because if you're trying, well, you got to go to college. If you don't go to college, you get a bad job. Is that unpleasant enough? Do they feel capable of doing that? Is there a solution for them? Those are all different things you have to take a look at. So whether it be a teenager or a foreclosure, or if you're writing copy on the Internet, if you're going to use fear, which is a good when it's done the right way, and they're already in the desperation, you use that four-part plan, and you'll see a big difference in it working with you. Because people just go straight to fear sometimes, and it's just so silly or irrelevant or doesn't matter, or they don't believe it, and it goes a long way. And that's a big part of it, too, is it needs to be believable. Do they really believe that that's going to happen? That comes back with the imminent part. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yep. The,
I'm all the about belief the systems in the... Go ahead.
The belief that you're mentioning, Kurt, would you say in that context you need to provide a believable solution? Are you talking about the solution or the imminent problem?
Well, first of all, the imminent problem needs to be believable. Okay?
Okay.
And then... the capable part is they got to feel capable. Can I do this? Can I really save my house? Can I really, is it really going to, something I can do? Whether it be weight loss, too, do they feel capable? Maybe they've tried 5 or 6 different things, and all of a sudden you've got this new thing that's going to help them out. Do they really feel capable this time, or do they have the support this time to make sure they're going to make it work?
Right. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So simple thing, just to review today, we have inspiration versus desperation. You're looking for that. Again, when they're an inspiration, you're staying there. Vision, ego, esteem, you're working towards that. But if you're going to use desperation and they're already there, crank up the desperation, which is the fear, and buffer that with inspiration. But now you have the formula to make it work and to remember that it's a learned fear. It is a learned fear that they've picked up. But when you have that formula and do it the right way, make a huge difference in your ability to motivate them and persuade them. Any questions on that, what we talked about today?
That's beautiful.
Yeah, Dave in Daytona here.
Hey, Dave.
Today I was at a political rally, and one of the candidates running for president was using fear to say what would happen if the other person won. And then he was turning around and saying, but on my plan, this is how we're going to get rid of that fear. So he's basically doing the same thing that you're talking about, isn't he?
He is. Politics is, how can I say this the right way? Politics is amazing because there's so much emotion involved that people are really blinded by, and this is true for both parties. I'm neutral because I do, you know, I look at both parties and at what they're doing and not doing in the persuasive standpoint. But both parties are so emotionally involved that their party is the best and the other party's evil, that when they start talking about fear and frustration, there's such a high emotional level there that people aren't using very much logic. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Because we'll show someone a video of a local candidate. They don't know who it is. And we'll ask them what political party they are. And we'll say, well, it's the same political party. And they'll like what they have to say. But they could be actually the opposite political party. So what we're finding is it doesn't matter. When they say they're the same, they like them, but when they're different, they don't, even though it's the same message. All that matters is, and it's a neutral message. It could go with any party, but if it's the same, they like it. If they don't, they don't like it, even though it's a very positive, empowering message. Does that make sense?
Yes, because they paint that fear. I mean, and they really get emotional about it, so they're painting it so well, the listener can see it in their mind, but all of a sudden they're saying, well, thank God I'm here to save you from that evil or that bad situation, whether it's foreclosure or whatever.
It is, and that's what both candidates are doing. For example, you look at Brock, his motto is change. Okay? Now, what people do when they say something like this, and both candidates do this, and all politicians do this, they'll say something like freedom or change or democracy or the American way. There's really no one definition for that. Nobody knows what he means by change. Okay? But what happens is we fill in the blank. Well, change means this to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So they're speaking to, he's speaking to me, because even though he just said change or whatever it is, all of a sudden that's exactly what they want. They filled in the blank even though the candidate never really defined that. So, yeah, there's a whole different realm with politics and the emotions and the different parties. I thought it'd always be fun just to let them run and then don't reveal their party until after the election.
That'd be interesting.
You'd be getting very different results, I'm telling you. Just let them run, you know, pick 2 or 3 people, let them run, don't pick any parties, let people choose, and then say, oh, by the way, I'm this, and I bet you a lot of people would be surprised.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because on the Howard Stern Show, they actually went to a community, and they took one party's platform and put it on the other candidate. And when the interviewer asked some of the people who they voted for, they'd say candidate A, but then the interviewer would describe some candidate B's platforms and ask them if they agreed with those. Certainly they agreed with them wholeheartedly, even though they were for the other candidate.
Yeah, I had a student send that to me. That was pretty fun to listen to.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And again, that's where the emotions get involved. We see what we want to see. There's a self-perception bias. We always look for the good, and we kind of cover the bad. And it's human nature 101. You see, it comes out strong with the politics. Any other questions? All right. So this week, I want you to do good as far as picking up people's inspiration versus desperation, and start using fear in the right way. Look at the way you're talking to people. Make sure it has all four of those pieces to the fear formula, and you'll see a big difference in what people are able to do and the success that you'll have and the ability to motivate them. All right?
Thanks a lot.
You got
Thanks,
it.
Kurt.
You got it. Everyone have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.